Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily of those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station.
From KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain, California, this is Community Works Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg. Community Works Radio is a locally produced show that focuses on people who work for the common good in their communities, people who join in KKRN's mission of fostering positive social change and healthy communities. Today, my guest is Janessa Wilder, and her organization is the Euphrates Institute. Janessa Gans Wilder is a former CIA officer turned peace builder, social entrepreneur, and nonprofit executive. She is the founder and chief executive officer of the Euphrates Institute, a grassroots peace building organization. She founded Euphrates after 5 years at the CIA focused on the Middle East, including serving 21 months in Iraq from 2003 to 2005. Janessa is a frequent speaker in interfaith, community, government, international, and educational settings. She has written dozens of articles and been interviewed by major news outlets, including CBS, CNN, Los Angeles Times, Christian Science Monitor, Democracy Now!, and many more. For over a decade, Janessa has provided the vision and leadership to grow Euphrates Institute into a global network of peace builders and change makers, now comprising over 30 chapters in 15 countries. She has a master's degree in international policy studies from Stanford University and a bachelor's in international relations from Principia College. Janessa lives in Redding, California, with her husband and three young children. She enjoys spending time in nature, running, and yoga. And welcome so much to our show today, Janessa.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks for that intro.
Well, what an impressive life you've had, let's put it that way. We're so excited to have you tell us about your organization. And we'd like to start out with how it came to be.
Oh, I'd love to share. Thanks for having me on here today. And well, it came to be because of the Euphrates River. It's called the Euphrates Institute. And after 9/11, so I was working for the agency, and 9/11 really changed my whole focus. I'd never thought about the Middle East before. I was never interested in that part of the world. I thought it was just a lot of sand and people fighting over it. But it really made me realize how even here in the U.S., we can be deeply affected from things that are happening so far away, you know, a region that's halfway across the world directly affecting us so intimately. So I was focused on the Middle East after that point and spent almost 2 years in Iraq. And the Euphrates River was this incredible feature through the winding its way through the desert. And to me, it was also winding its way through the war zones of Iraq. I was a counterinsurgency analyst in western Iraq in Al Anbar province. And after experiencing, you know, being close to the front lines in Fallujah and places like Ramadi that were just blowing up with this insurgency, it just really, to me, was a really low point in my life, filled with such despair and darkness, just wondering how do we get out of this mess and sacrificing so much blood and treasure. And so to me, that river was this beautiful beacon of hope and inspiration flowing through, this unstoppable force. And I actually had this epiphany. I'd gone for a run one evening and went up on the roof of the base. So I was staying with Special Forces. And this was after almost 2 weeks in Fallujah, in the midst of mortars going off and bombs and just incredible the noise and destruction of the war zone. And I went up to the roof and I took in the most amazing scene in front of me, which was this peaceful, quiet, no bombs going off, you know, incredible stillness that was flowing right in front of me. And what I realized was that same river was flowing a few miles downstream in the middle of Fallujah, in the middle of that war zone. That river of life was flowing. And the question that came to me was, which one will you choose, the river or the war zone? And it was so clear to me that even though here was this quiet force, that it was more powerful than the war zone, that no matter how many bombs went off, how much death and destruction, that that river of life was undeterred. It couldn't affect the flow and trajectory of that river, and then it was more powerful than the war zone. So I said, with everything in me, I choose the river. And I didn't really know what that meant at that time, but I went back and told my boss that I wanted to work on the positive side of things, on helping Iraqis and building Iraq and creating a new future rather than just fighting the problem. So that has formed the inspiration of the whole, everything we've done since then with Euphrates Institute.
My goodness, what a story, and what a vision that brings to mind, because I actually have seen the picture of you standing up on that building. If you hear Janessa talking today and you're interested in wanting to see and hear more and read more, you should definitely go to her website, the website for Euphrates Institute. And that just came to mind as you were speaking, because it's really a fantastic moment in your life, and the result of it is so interesting too. So what were your steps? I mean, when did you figure it out that you wanted to start the Euphrates Institute in honor of the River of Life?
Yeah, you know, and just as you say that, it brings to mind, it's really a question for each of us. You know, which path will we choose in every arena, in every aspect of our lives? We have that choice laid out in front of us. And for me, it came in that very stark form of a question in my mind, which will I choose? And to be fighting against the problem, to be on the side of war and conflict, or on the side of life and peace. And so what just initially was that moment turned into changing from counterinsurgency analysis to democracy building in Iraq, and then realizing that really real change does not come from government. It doesn't come from the CIA. It doesn't come from the State Department. It doesn't even come from our military. When I went back to Iraq many years later to kind of uncover, well, what had changed since the big regime change? And what we realized was that you cannot overnight change a dictatorship mentality to a democratic mentality, that really winning hearts and minds starts with individual transformation. It starts one person at a time, a deep, deep transformation that you can't even really put a timeline on. So no matter how much money and power and influence and heft the U.S. government has at its disposal, what I saw was that real change happens at the grassroots. It happens one person at a time, one community at a time. And so that's really what has changed our focus. Why I started Euphrates was this. I'm not interested in surface change. I'm interested in real transformation. That's what's needed to awaken our world, to create world peace. You know, it sounds fantastic, but it really is true that how do we bring peace on earth? And so Euphrates is all about focus on one community at a time, one person at a time at the grassroots level. And so to go from top down to bottom up has been a big shift in my life.
I see. And so did you get the beginning of the organization when you came back to the United States, or
yes,
did it actually start with people in other countries?
Right. So after I returned, I resigned from the CIA and immediately started. That was beginning of 2006. I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew I wanted to bring people together, build bridges, help educate Americans about the people of the Middle East, about the issues, and foster those connections. So we've had a long journey, and then I couldn't make it work. So I went back to be a consultant. I was teaching at my undergraduate alma mater, Middle East politics and religious fundamentalism. So now 10 plus years later, we're finally on a roll. You know, we've kind of found our groove. And what started as a purely Middle East focus, other people from other countries started contacting us and saying, this isn't just about building bridges between the Middle East and West. We each need to, our motto is to turn the other into a brother. We want to turn others into brothers in our community, in Liberia, in India, in Pakistan, in the Congo, in Jordan, you know, other places where we're all yearning to see conflicts resolved and people brought together. in those communities. And that could look like albinos and non-albinos. It could look like Hindus and Muslims in India. It could look like extreme, you know, ISIS and non-ISIS in Sudan. It really takes the local flavor. And that, but it's been a beautiful thing that it's expanded beyond just the Middle East, because people everywhere are hungering for this. They're hungering to make a difference in their own local community with whoever the other is in their community.
Yes, and we certainly have plenty of that in our own country, I would add.
Oh, my goodness. That's why. More and more.
Yes, and you have chapters here. So did the first chapter start here?
The first chapter started actually when I was teaching at Principia College. So it was a group of college students. So there were about 20 plus students. And then we realized that even beyond Principia, people were interested in this idea. So we decided to expand it beyond Principia. Our goal was one additional chapter beyond Principia. And then in that first year, we had over a dozen.
And were they from other countries as well?
Yeah, across the U.S. and other countries. Yeah, right away it was both local and global. And I think more and more what we're seeing in the U.S. is, you know, I just got back from a trip to Israel and Palestine, and they were saying, you know, actually, you kind of need our help. Now, we've been at this a while at peace building, and we're getting worried about you in the U.S. between red and blue and left and right, and you guys got to get your act together, and we can teach you a few things. And it's true, you know, the divisions and cleavages in our own country are getting much, much deeper, and it is something we need to awaken to for sure.
Okay, I see. So, so the work that you do now, what are you, you know, like I said, the website, which is euphratesinstitute.org, talks about your mission and guiding principles and philosophy, and all that seems pretty important to the work you do. Which of those things do you think are kind of the sort of sum up the work that you do? How do you do the work?
I think it's really in creating a sense of community and support for these grassroots change makers and peace builders. So they're not getting that support elsewhere. So let's say our folks in Cote d'Ivoire, for example, James Ofu started a chapter there. He was the only person who was able to reconcile these two warring tribes in the Ivory Coast. And he basically created a model of how to do that. What was it that was successful in bringing these tribes together? Now, for that change to be replicated, he has to have a network and a community of support. Otherwise, that would just be stay localized to his area. So by him being a part of Euphrates, all of a sudden, he's meeting peace builders in India. He's meeting peace builders all over Africa, in the U.S. So though his model now gets expanded and exchanged in a community, in best practices and in a community of support and engagement. So we want to learn from each other as change agents and peace builders. We want to grow. We want to encourage each other. This is hard work.
Right.
It's disheartening.
So, yeah, I like the view of that, because you're saying that you have a good model, you do something that makes things better in your own community, and now you have an idea of how to go and help others with that information.
Yes, that's right.
And that's what the chapters are kind of focused on doing. Yeah. And it's great, because then it brings it right back down to each community having to take responsibility for their problems, but perhaps getting support from people who've been through it. Is that the idea?
Yes, and it's such a lonely road. You know, these folks are really on the front lines. They're sacrificing their finances, their families, their lives in many cases. And so you also just need that sense of encouragement, and that so they feel like they're part of a global family of people who have each other's back. We're all in it together. Me being more effective in my work in Northern California, it encourages me that then so-and-so is doing their part in Pakistan. So I'm going to keep doing the best I can, because he's solving his issues over there. So I can't go solve the issues in Pakistan, but I want to support the guys who are doing it. And likewise, so if each of us step up to be those peace builders, that is how we see bigger change.
Okay. I would like to share the guiding principles, if that's okay with you, that are on your mission statement. We strive to practice the golden rule locally and globally. We believe the world is interconnected and interdependent. We believe there is a solution to every challenge. We seek to humanize the other. We get beyond headlines of despair and highlight the good. We agree with Albert Einstein's sentiment that problems cannot be solved at the same level of thinking that created them. Well, those are pretty great. And then also, our purpose is to inspire humanity to act from oneness. And I was interested in having you tell me what that means.
Yeah. Well, I think the most amazing experience I know I've had in my life is when I really, it was kind of another epiphany, but it was another feeling that I was absolutely connected to everyone and everything. And it was a little glimpse. This was in 2001, and it has stayed with me ever since then. But it was the most moving and beautiful experience. And it wasn't just that I was connected to everything. It was that everything was permeated by a sense of love and deep connection. And that how could I feel anything but incredible love for anyone standing in front of me? Because I was them, and they are me. And we are all in this together. And I was the wind and the bird that I saw flying in front of me. And it was such a moving experience. And so by definition, seeing life in that way, you move in the world differently. All of a sudden, it's not about my interest and not your interest, that we have joint interests. They are equally valid. They are connected. That the only way that I take care of myself is by taking care of you. And so I think if we wake up to that, which, you know, I know more and more in, you know, spiritual practice, more and more people are even using this languaging and this, you know, it sounds so out there, but actually more and more people are experiencing it. And so the most amazing thing is to have that realization. And then how do you act from that realization? How do you act from that space? And I don't think we even have models for that. We don't even know. It's not encouraged in our schools, you know. So our visionaries are living examples and models of that. They get oneness and they live from that space. And so we want to show what that looks like and inspire people to do likewise, because each of us has that ability and potential. And if we act from that rather than competition and conflict, we would see such a different world.
Right. I've heard one world passed around a lot, that notion, and maybe it's like
one humanity, world. It is. Right. It's one blue dot floating in the universe.
That's right. Not as big as we think it is.
No.
I just want to let our listeners know that my guest today is Janessa Wilder, and she's speaking to us about the Euphrates Institute. And it's on KKRN Community Radio, listener supported by people like you out there in the community who like to hear this type of show. I'm Ellen Sugg, and the name of the show is Community Works Radio. So, Janessa, I have one other question along the same lines. How can people learn to be peace builders or peacemakers?
Yeah, I think we all are. You know, we are that, and it's just about learning. Sometimes it's about hearing a story that inspires us, like, wow, if this normal guy in this country can just do something so amazing, what can I do in my own community? So it's hearing a story, it's having a model, and then it's taking that baby step. I think so often there's this sense of paralysis because we don't even know where to begin. So we get overwhelmed, the headlines are so negative, climate change, conflict, you know, what could we possibly do? I'm one person. But if we start to take that baby step in our own local sphere, in our own way, using our own interest or skill or talent, and we start to take a step, we find there is incredible momentum and energy behind that first step. And then it grows from there. And the reality is, that's why we so much highlight the average person we are all visionaries. We all have that capacity. And so when you see how one person can make a difference, it inspires each one of us to then do the best we can, to the best of our ability, and to make that difference. And we are all change makers. We are all peace builders. We're all in this together.
Okay. And as you explain this, I was thinking about your Visionary of the Year program. Each year you pick one. And your Visionary of the Year this year has a TEDx talk on your website, which it's worth listening. By the way, Janessa also has a TEDx speech on the website, which is very good. You heard parts of it today in a way. Mm-hmm. I recognized it. But I think maybe telling a little bit about him. Nipun?
Yes, yeah, Nipun Mehta is our visionary for 2019. He is the founder of a group called Service Space. It's over 500,000 volunteers from all over the world. And their kind of ethic is that human beings, we are wired for generosity. We are wired for service. And maybe our economic models don't, you know, reflect that. It's all about self-interest or competition. But actually, as human beings, we are wired to serve others and to care for others. And so what does that look like? So they do incredible small acts of kindness that have ripple effects. They get together to reflect together, to inspire each other, and then to do those acts in their communities. I recently did a retreat with some service-based people a few weeks ago, and every conversation was, how can I serve you? How can I help you? What can I do to support this? And because they see service as the basis of a relationship. And the point is to have a relationship, but the only way you can have a true relationship is by serving that person. So I'd never been in such an environment where everyone is like tripping over themselves to help each other the most. And the ripple effect has been huge. I mean, this has just spread through so many countries and organizations, all modeled on giving, all modeled on service.
Generosity, I thought, yeah, was one of his words. And didn't he have a new word?
You may giftivism.
Not, giftivism. So right. You give of yourself, and you don't worry about whether you're going to get it back.
That's
right. But you encourage people when you do give. I gave to you. Give to somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, paying somebody's toll at the bridge.
Yeah, paying it forward.
A great model. And he actually, one of the things that stunned me, he says, we don't believe in fundraising.
Yeah. Their budget's like $12,000 for over 500,000 people. They're all, he himself, full-time volunteer for over 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. Well, since Kay Karen's a volunteer institution,
you
I know
all
how
know
hard
about
that
giftivism.
Is.
Yeah.
But I don't know how we can do it without fundraising. So, anyway, you're listening to Janessa Gans Wilder talking on Community Works Radio on KKRN Community Radio about her work in the community and in the world, the Euphrates Institute. And she, when we come back from a little musical break that's coming up, she's going to be telling us more about upcoming events that the Euphrates Institute are doing in Reading. So we hope you'll stay tuned for those. And here's a little musical break for you.
Come on into my land, it's your land too now. Wanna shake your hand, wanna know your story, the journey you've been on. Wanna hear your language, wanna learn your song. The earth knows no borders, just one sky above, and friendship has no fences, no walls can stop the love. Welcome, make my home yours. These arms are open, and so are the doors. Faces of the world are all around us today. Many voices make for harmony. Let the music play. My life is richer for your presence today. Let's break bread together while our children play. I hope you like it here. I hope that you are safe and your children without fear. But if they come to take you in the dead of the night, I'll be there beside you to stand up for your rights. I will harbor you, I'll fight for you as you do for me. And when everyone is welcome, we will all be free. Welcome, I say welcome, you are welcome.
If you're just tuning in, welcome back to Community Works Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg, and my guest today is Janessa Wilder, and we are talking about her work with the Euphrates Institute. So one of the things that they do is take some trips. And so, Janessa, would you mind talking with us a little bit about your last trip to Israel and Palestine?
Sure. Well, yeah, I went in January, and this was my 8th trip since 2005. So it's been interesting to see it over the years. And, you know, I'm pretty optimistic in general, but it has been really discouraging that each time it seems to have gotten worse and worse, definitely on the political level between, you know, with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and just a lot of more hardened views on both sides. And I think so much of that has to do with there's really very little connection, you know, for life on the Israeli side. It's not bad. Of course, they have, you know, rockets from Hamas, and they have to deal with, you know, the threat from Lebanon. But on the whole, as one Israeli friend told me, it's soccer moms. It's people, you know, dealing with normal life. And on the other side of the wall is such a complete different reality. Their whole world focuses on the occupation and on their miserable living conditions and the situation and how they're eking out an existence and the checkpoints. And it's just, it's all consuming. And it's like never the two meet, you know, they're one side that doesn't have to concern itself with life on the other side and rarely goes over. In fact, Israeli citizens are forbidden from their own government to going into the Palestinian areas. And for Palestinians, it's almost impossible to get a permit to go on the other side. So you have these two sides who are sharing the same very small space, which is Israel and Palestine. You know, it's such a tiny area. And to have this kind, you know, the wall going right through the middle of it, and the Palestinians themselves are divided. And so, you know, each time I've gone back, it's just, how could this ever be resolved? You know, you just think, you look at that, you look at the map, you look at the settlements inside the West Bank, which is supposed to be their future state, and you think, there's no way on earth. And here I usually look for the hope, right? But I'll tell you what gives me hope is that there are people on both sides who continue to have those conversations and who continue to look at their own judgments about the other side, their own narratives that teach them only one way to think, one way to be, and they challenge those narratives, and they are continually interested in living side by side in peace and harmony. And those groups, it's to me, to maintain that kind a viewpoint in that environment is incredible to me.
Yeah, I know. And maybe it's possible that some people listening, when you make reference to checkpoints and the wall and the settlements, they may not understand exactly what it really is. Could you explain that a little further? What is the checkpoint about?
Right. So when the West Bank and Gaza, but I'll just talk about the West Bank for now, was occupied in the 1967 war. So Israel, in this astounding victory, tripled its size in 6 days and took the West Bank from Jordan and Gaza Strip from Egypt and the Golan Heights from Syria. So it kind of moved into that territory. And of course, there were, you know, Arabs living there, and started to build slowly at first, but then it started gaining a lot of ground in the 80s. But Jewish settlements, which are communities inside the West Bank. So the problem is, if you're going to have that territory as a future Palestinian state, it's really hard to do that when you have Jewish cities or settlements in the middle of that territory. So in a way, West Bank right now looks like Swiss cheese. You've got some Palestinian towns, but a whole lot of Jewish towns interspersed with them. And then you have checkpoints between each of those towns, because in order to kind of maintain security control of Palestinians, because if they're driving nearby these Jewish towns, they want to make sure there are no weapons are allowed anyway. But, you know, who they are they permitted to be there, and to keep, to maintain control. So that means for a Palestinian going from village A to village B, it might take you all day because you have to go through a checkpoint to get there. And you're just trying to go visit your mom or your neighbor. And so it makes everyday life for Palestinians so cumbersome, so difficult, so challenging for them to even get to work. So it's just complete control.
You have to show ID in order to get through.
They have to have their ID. No, they have to have their ID on their person at all times and all the time. You know, even as in your nightgown, it's like they better have their ID on them.
And then the settlements, as I understand it, one of the other problems with them is that they just come in and take away land that people are already using, Arabs are already using. And so it's not as benign as it sounds, just adding new homes. It's somebody else's place
very often
moving into.
Yeah.
And so it makes it really hard. So what do you do when you take college kids? This was a college kid.
Yes. Yeah, this one was college kids. So this one was a religion and peace building group. So I think often people go to the Holy Land and they want to know about the healing that happened 2,000 years ago. And for me, it is so important to see what is the present day situation that needs healing, that needs peace. So it's not enough to just learn about the wonderful things that happened thousands of years ago, but what is right in front of us? And if people are really wanting to absorb the lessons of the prophets and the Bible, and then they need to be putting that into practice. So we really look at a modern day context of what is happening, what causes conflict, and also who are those modern day peace builders, the people who are continuing the footsteps, maybe not in a religious sense, but what they are doing in practicing forgiveness and seeing oneness and willing to bridge those divides is truly holy work. I mean, it is so hard, so difficult. And so we want to meet with them, learn of their inspiration, and then for the kids to take all the students, rather, they're not kids, to take that back and to be inspired, to be peace builders themselves, to have the land of the Bible come alive, and then to be more connected to this issue, which Americans, whether they know it or not, are so directly and intimately involved in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, whether it's support for Israel or funding or disregard for the other. We are so, and we get blamed for so much that's happening. We've got to know more about that situation and be more engaged on this issue.
Yes, it is. It is definitely, the United States is one of Israel's biggest supporters, if not the biggest.
The
supporter.
Biggest. Mm-hmm.
And it's very tough to see it exist when you know people in Palestine, which I do, and you've been there, and you do, and so. What I wonder also is, what do you think for the students was most notable, or what was their most common response to visiting Palestine and seeing what life is like there?
You know, I was really struck by how much they made the parallels to their own experience in the U.S., whether it was suffering or persecution along racial lines or gender, or, I mean, it was amazing all the connections they were making, and that warmed my heart that they didn't see this as just an isolated thing. They said, wow, you know, and they experienced the West Bank. They had a homestay. They all ran out of electricity. You know, they had to go through a checkpoint. They went to a refugee camp, heard about the 12-year-old kid who'd been killed by the Israeli sniper. And so they saw this life that is so miserable in a lot of ways. And then they brought it back home. Wow. You know, think about my own community and what's happening with, you know, the racial divide, and I just didn't even understand, and I want to know more, and I want to do. So I was encouraged by how much they wanted to apply those lessons in their own local community, and that's exactly our goal.
Your goal and mission, right. Very good. Well, I noticed some of them said, because you also have a film about your trip on your website, so I did my homework and looked at some of these things, I guess you could say, but I just heard some of them saying, I didn't expect it to be so beautiful here. It's actually very beautiful. You think of it as just being war-torn and must be terrible, but they were really, like, impressed that it was a beautiful setting and that they met very, very nice and kind people. And
the nicest.
And it just was, they felt so welcomed by people there, and people shared their experiences with them, and they seemed to be really moved by that part of the trip.
Ellen, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is so important. We do have this image, and it's like you go there, you're instantly family, you're taken care of, the food's great, the people are wonderful, and oh, absolutely, it's so important.
Yeah. So, and you're saying now you're not doing as many trips. Is there going to be another one in the future?
I'll do one next January. Yeah, it slowed down with the three children, and it's hard to be that far and that gone for that long, but they'll probably pick up again.
And so will it be school? Is there a way that people in this community could sign up for a trip with you?
Sure. Yeah, we did one in 2016. We had a few folks from Reading come, and anyone is welcome to join the Euphrates trips. This last one was just done through this college, and the next one is as well. It's a trip for adults, but through Principia, and with all that, the other activities that Euphrates has, it's been easier for me because I have to do less planning. So we'll do more Euphrates trips in the future that are open to anyone.
Okay, great. And they're about how many days?
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay, well, that's really a great opportunity for people. So one of the things I'd kind of like to turn to now is the big event that you have coming up in Reading next month. And if you could tell us about that. That would be great.
We are so excited. This is going to be our first major international gathering, and we're having it right here in Redding, California, of our peace builders from around the world. Five different countries are going to be represented, and some of our chapter leaders from across the U.S. And it's just so important in this time of disconnection and division that we come together. So we really want to share the same space and be connected, share stories, cry together, laugh together, and then learn more tools and peace-building skills and dialogue and listening tools. We'll have wonderful facilitators who will help us in that learning process, and then we'll envision, how do we even have more of an impact? How can we be even more effective global citizens and peace builders? So that's a 2.5-day deep dive summit that will be at the McConnell Foundation in Reading. And then that third night, Friday night, March 29th, is going to be a wonderful celebration at the Sheraton Hotel. And that's our gala event where Nipun will speak. We'll hear from some of our international folks. People who were not at the summit will get a taste of the incredible stories of inspiration and change that are happening around the world, and to just really come away inspired. And that is open to everyone. That is open to the public. We would love to have a packed house for this first ever gala event.
Okay, great. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Community Works Radio on KKRN, listener-supported community radio. I'm Ellen Sugg, the host of Community Works Radio, and Janessa Wilder is here today, and we're learning about her organization called the Euphrates Institute, and we're going to be focusing kind of the end of this show on more about the event and the information. We have to share the information of where they go and what's going on in Reading with the Euphrates Institute, and if you're a Shasta County person that would like to get involved, how you might be able to do that. So I would like to just say again, the dates of the summit are March 27th to 29th.
Yes.
2019. It's going to take place at the Gaia, and you have to go online and
At the McConnell Foundation.
I mean, at the McConnell.
Yeah, that's Lima
right.
Ranch.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. maybe I just had envisioned it. But yeah, it's at the McConnell Foundation, but you go online to register or apply.
Sure.
Yep. And how many people are going to participate in it?
We can have up to 75 at the 3-day summit. So that's really going to be a deep dive for people who are very interested in global citizenship and peace building and meeting these folks from around the world. We mm-hmm. definitely want to have room for a lot of local people to participate in that.
And does it go on all day, like 9 to 5,
mm-hmm.
and then have
yeah.
an evening aspect too?
It's 8 to 5 on Wednesday. It's all day and evening Thursday. There will be a story sharing, some music that night, and then Friday only until noon. And then we'll break, and then we'll come together again for the gala at the Sheraton. And we're, that one's open to all. We would love volunteers. There are so many aspects that we still need help with, like housing some of our folks or helping with setup or greeting people at the door. We want everyone to feel so acknowledged and welcome and seen and just and inspired to be there. So if you're interested, you can also to volunteer or to register or to buy tickets for the gala. That's at riverofhopesummit.com, or you can find it on our website, which is euphrates.org, but riverofhopesummit.com, and that's what the event is called.
It's right, River I was going to say, it is called the River of Hope, and you have quite a bit of great information too. What can you expect? You will experience a rich community of practice and will be introduced to new concepts and tools to broaden and deepen your practices in peace and social change. You will meet inspiring local and global peace builders and social shifters, like our 5 international honorees. And these people are coming with experience in reconciling tribes that seem beyond rescue, mending gaps between non-albinos and albinos, organizing community and international peace events and activism. Our honorees come with a remarkable amount of success in peace building and transformation in their respective communities. And you also have a great list of people that will be the facilitators teaching the classes.
Yes.
Professor Aaron Wolf, he wrote the book, The Spirit of Dialogue, Lessons from Faith Traditions in Transforming Conflict.
Now, yeah, Aaron is the leading water conflict mediator. So that's going to be a session on learning from nature, which, you know, we all encounter obstacles in this work, whether it's financial or government or war. And so how do we learn from nature? Resilience or community or persistence or beauty. So he, as a water conflict mediator, knows how to look for those clues. And then he'll partner with a local ecologist also who knows this area. So it's going to be mainly workshops. It's not going to be speeches. It's going to be really each person invited to learn and plumb their own depths for these lessons.
Great. And then there's also Kern Beer.
Kern Berry.
Berry, okay. Founder of Pop the Bubble and Difficult Conversations. I think we all need help with that.
Oh, boy. He's done the workshop now 4 times in Reading, and it's helpful across political lines, across religious, all sorts of things. That what makes difficult conversations difficult, and yet why is it so vital that we have them? So why can't I tell the difference between a difference of opinion and a physical attack? Well, mm-hmm. our brain doesn't know the difference. So even just knowing that and the neuroscience behind that, and then having tools for still how to engage, is so vital for every American in this climate.
And is Curran from Reading? Are these?
He's from San Mateo.
Oh, okay. So most of these are from someplace else.
Right.
So that's cool. We're getting some really great people coming to Reading to help us learn some important things. So if any of you are interested, I guess for working people, you would have to make some arrangement about your work. But I could see all kinds of ages and types of people that could really enjoy coming to this.
Absolutely.
There's also Sally Mahe.
Mm-hmm. She's a founding member of the United Religions Initiative, which is the largest grassroots interfaith organization in the world. They're in 108 countries, hundreds of local chapters. And she's going to do a process called appreciative inquiry, which is really to appreciate the values and skills people are bringing to the table in the room, and then how do we build on that. Just a wonderful, wonderfully skilled facilitator.
Great. And finally, Esperanza Universal, creator and CEO of the Systems of Universal Law Institute.
Yeah, she's a master expert at obstacles that come up and how to remove them, whether it's fear, whether, you know, all the different things that we in this field, which is really about change, how do we work through those?
Okay. So they go to
riveroftopesummit.com.
Okay.
For that, or euphrates.org, and you can find it there.
And the gala, if you want to get tickets for the gala, are they at River of Hope?
Summit.com.
Yeah. Also, because I see that. Okay, and then as far as people who would just like to get in touch with you to become part of the Euphrates Institute chapter here, to volunteer for the event, how do they let you know?
Sure, Vanessa? Yes. There's so there are monthly meetings of the local chapter in Reading. It meets the first Thursday of every month. And they also have a website, which I don't know what it is. I think if you Google Euphrates Reading, and we have a newsletter, so everyone in the community is kept really well informed about the local events and activities, and all are welcome to that monthly meeting and to sign up on. Oh, and they're also on Facebook, very active Facebook presence. If you are on Facebook, you can go to find the Euphrates Reading chapter. Just a really vibrant, wonderful community here. That I'd encourage you to reach out to us and join.
Okay, great. And then let's see then. I think we have about four more minutes. And let's see if you might want to just do some ending words of wrapping it up for, you know, what people can do.
Yeah. Here. I just think that it is time in our world to be asking these questions, you know, how do we build community? How do we view the other? How do we move from competitive to collaborative societies? Another question I'm always in is, why is war a $1 trillion industry and everyone in the peace building field is poor and struggling, and yet we say we want peace? And so I think if we say we want these things, or we want a more united America, you know, we want these things, but what are we really doing about it? And I think that I think we need help in that. I think we need support. I think we need ideas. I think we need vision. I think we need inspiration. We need community to do that. And so I think at our core, we all want the same thing. We all want that. We're yearning for that. And so in our way, we're just providing as much of a space, as much inspiration, as many tools and models for people to get over that paralysis, or to get over that apathy, or whatever is standing in our way between what we so desire and so want and where we are now. Because a lot needs to change, and it's in our power to do that. We just need encouragement. So that's what you'll get at the summit. That's what you'll get at the gala. And if you'd like to join us in any way, we so welcome you and appreciate you being willing to take that step. And it helps us all. It helps our world. It helps our communities. And it's just so vital.
Okay. And I think that another thing I'm just going to ask you, because I think it would be of interest to people to know a little bit about a couple of the chapters, because you do have chapters, 30 chapters, they say, and 15 of them are in other countries. And is there an example?
In 15 countries.
Oh, in 15 countries.
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't have the exact number of who's where, but okay. So in 15 different countries, there's chapters. And so does your chapter in Reading interact with those people much?
To some extent, we have a monthly call for all the chapter leaders. So the chapter leaders of the Reading chapter are getting to know the chapter leaders from other countries. And so that's part of what we'd like to do more of. And so important for this summit, for example, is to build that sense of community. That how, you know, again, just knowing that so-and-so, they're working their hearts out in their environment, helps give context, it helps give encouragement to us working here. And so when you feel part of that family and part of that larger body, then it's more motivating, and you know it all matters. You know, there's a point to it. So we are doing this event is going to be really important for us to get to know each other on a deeper level, to have that time together, to hear each other's stories, and then that just builds incredible collaboration. You know, once you
have that
foundation,
you're just saying even for the local people, the summit will be doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to be quite an amazing thing.
Amazing.
Yeah. So just to give you the list: Ghana, Sudan, Congo, Nigeria, Tanzania, Liberia, Burundi. Burundi, Jordan, Pakistan, Palestine. You have two chapters in Palestine. Mm-hmm. Hebron. I hear about Hebron a lot because they have beautiful glass, right?
Yes, they do.
And Pakistan, and then two in India. So two in Pakistan also, and two in India, and two in Palestine. And then College Station, Texas in the U.S., Elsa, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
Redding, California, Seattle, Washington, and St. Louis, Missouri.
And St. Lawrence in New York, and UC Berkeley, UC Riverside, and yeah, a whole bunch of others that are not mentioned on there. But
oh,
it's
wow.
Just, yeah.
So a lot of them are on college campuses.
I would say...
Or some
yeah,
in this country.
Yeah,
it sounds
maybe.
Like the ones in this country are mm-hmm. you know associated with a college.
Yeah, a lot
perhaps.
Of them.
Okay, well, that's really great. So you've been listening to Janessa Wilder telling us so many amazing things about the Euphrates Institute and the ideas that they promote and their big event coming up on March 27th through 29th. You go to riverofhopesummit.com to find out more about that if you think you, after hearing about it, would like to go. And Janessa has said... come to meetings if you're a local person who would like to get involved in the local chapter, and they can go to, how do they get information?
They can look us up on Facebook, the Euphrates Reading chapter, or Google Euphrates Reading,
okay,
and that website will come up.
We'll have phone numbers and places that they can call or find out where the meetings are.
Yes.
Okay, great. And so anyway, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to talk with you. I'm really
we'll see you
happy
next month,
there are
too.
People. Yes, I hope so. Yes, I hope to be there at the gala. And thanks. It's so wonderful to have a person like you in the world. And right here in Reading makes it great. So anyway, you have been tuned in to listener-supported KKRN Community Radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. You can become a listener supporter by going to our website, kkrn.org, and clicking on the Donate button, or by mailing a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 337-1101 to learn how to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio. Remember that KKRN programming streams live on our website and on the KKRN mobile phone. We have a Facebook page, KKRN 88.5, where you can like us and get news about your community radio. And also you can get a lot of information at our website, kkrn.org. Thank you for listening to Community Works Radio on KKRN. If you would like to talk about your community organization and work, please call me at our business line, 337-1101. Coming up next on KKRN is the Tom Hartman program until 6, and then the broadcast from 6 to 7. Next week, you can tune in at 4 p.m. to hear With Good Reason from Pacifica Radio at 4 p.m. on Tuesday. In the meantime, remember, it's going to take us all.
And the Baptists, Quakers and Catholics too, the atheists and agnostics, Muslims and Jews. We need people of all nations, all colors and all creeds, to put an end to war now, put an end to greed. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all. It's gonna take us all. We need the immigrants and the unions, the greens and the gays, hip-hoppers and bebopers and women for equal pay. Farm workers out in the sun, homeless out in the rain. It's seniors and soccer moms, for a world that is humane. Undertake us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Undertake us all in the streets, undertake us all, undertake us all. Socialists and the anarchists, the pacifists and the humanists. Every culture and community takes black and white and brown. Times we won't see eye to eye, but we stand on common ground. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all to make a change, all to win the peace, all in the streets.
Our book today is Midnight in Chernobyl, The Untold Story of the World's Greatest Nuclear Disaster by Adam Higginbotham. This is from the prologue, Saturday.